The first case is 05-813, State of Ohio, ex rel. The Repository versus Nova Behavioral Health. Mr. Panza.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court, my name is Richard Panza. I'm from Avon, Ohio, and I have the honor this morning to represent Relator, the Canton Repository. I would like to reserve 2 or 3 minutes of my time for rebuttal.
Watch your time there.
I will. Respondent Nova Behavioral Health, Inc. is or was a director of the Ohio Department of Mental Health certified community mental health agency that provides statutorily prescribed mental health services pursuant to a contract with the Stark County Community Mental Health Board to residents of Stark County who financially qualify. Respondent Nova's existence directly depended upon its receipt of over $8 million of public funds, which made up approximately 87% of its annual gross revenues. Sometime in the year 2005, there were a number of complaints filed by two patients against a professional counselor working for Nova. As a result of those complaints and a hearing conducted by the board, a reporter for Relator, the Canton Repository, made a request to inspect the personnel records of that particular professional counselor.
Counsel, you've indicated that these records, in your opinion, are public records discoverable under public records request, correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
What rule of law would you have us draft that would cover the situation when private nonprofit entities get government contracts? Is it a dollar figure? Or is it a function figure? Is it you do what the state does, but you only get 20% of your revenues from the state? Give me what you would define as the rule of law that would allow these to be subject to public records requests.
Your Honor, I think the rule of law exists, and the standards to be applied are as follows. If, in fact, the entity involved, the private entity involved, is inexplicably interwoven or intertwined with the public healthcare system, if, in fact, the private entity is performing a public function, if, in fact, the actions and activities of the private entity are under the control of a public institution, as they are in this case, and if, in fact, the private entity receives substantially all of its revenues from public funds, then I would indicate to the court that pursuant to 149.011A, that private entity is a public office.
So you would put the amount of revenue in there as one of the factors?
Absolutely. In terms of defining what a public office is.
So if Nova was doing all of your first tests except only got 20% of its revenues from the state, it would not be subject to public records?
Well, in this case, Your Honor, in this particular case, I would say there is an alternative argument that should be made.
That's not my question. I'm trying to define the test you want.
I would say substantial revenues.
Substantial. So we have, as you know, a lot of amicus briefs from a lot of people who are afraid that all the records are going to become public. So how do we apply a rule like that to a company that does the construction on freeways, where all their revenue comes from the government? They're performing freeway construction, which is traditionally a government function. Are those subject under your test to public records?
Well, Your Honor, if they meet the tests I've just enumerated, and if in fact substantially all of their revenues come from public funds, I think this court might have to bring that analysis to bear. The question in my mind would be whether or not the construction of roads constitutes a vital governmental function. I would say it did.
Do you know of anybody who does government roads, builds roads other than government? Have you ever heard of that?
Well, I know. I don't think the government builds roads. I think they contract to build roads. I don't think anyone else has the funds in order to do it. I would argue that if they met the test that I just enumerated, then in fact their records would in fact be subject to 149.43 of the Ohio Public Records Act.
So the fears that have been raised by the amicus briefs in fact would be reality under your test.
I don't, Your Honor, I don't see them as fears. I see that if in fact you are going to receive millions of dollars of public funds, then the public has the right to make a determination as to whether or not the funds are being spent wisely. I have a fear that millions of dollars of public funds are going to be wasted, and I'm not going to have anything, there's going to be nothing I can do about it because I can't get a hold of the records to determine whether or not the funds have been spent wisely. I think we should always break in favor of reviewing the funds and producing the records.
And you do not believe that the audit ability of the government, which is clearly in the statute, to audit any public funds that are awarded is sufficient for that protection. You feel that the corporate and other types of records are necessary?
Your Honor, I think there are times when 149.43(1) applies. Obviously, the statute applies. And when in fact you're providing a public service, you can see the financial records. But there are other occasions, as in this case, where the public has a right to see whether or not the actual services that are being performed are adequate, because the services being performed are under the jurisdiction of the Director of Mental Health. The public has the right to see whether or not, particularly in this case, the professional counselors are competent and whether or not their services are adequate, because their qualifications are under the direct supervision of the Director of Mental Health. So there are situations, Your Honor, when financial records may be enough, but there are other situations, such as this case, where the direct service being provided bears a direct relationship to the money being received. And that's the case we have before us. Justice Stratton.
Counsel, following up on that, example, because this is a tightrope here. Yesterday we had a case involving the University of Cincinnati's claim that every doctor and nurse that went near patients, if they have contracts with them all saying you're the assistant professor of this or that. And then they have these private practice plans, which are private practice plans, which are nonprofit corporations formed at the direction of the university. Single shareholder is the chief of that department. The chief of neurosurgery would be the single shareholder, and all the other doctors, they get paid principally from monies that they bill for patients, but they get paid something by the university, and that money flows back and forth. So would all these private practice plans that exist at our state universities, would they be subject to the Public Records Act under the definition you would have us?
Well, first of all, we know that if you're a public employee, there are certain records which may be subject to the Public Records Act, such as your personnel file. And of course, I'm sure the court isn't talking about patient records or anything that may be exempt under 149.43.
But for example, how much the private corporation is paying every doctor, is that a public record?
I don't think what a private corporation is paying every doctor is a public record, unless that private corporation is under the jurisdiction and control of a public entity and is receiving public funds. I could theorize certain situations where how much doctors are being paid and the qualifications of those doctors obviously would be a public record and would be subject to public inquiry. In this particular case, it is remarkable if you review Chapter 340 that particularly the purpose of the statute, section 340.011, the purpose of the statute is to encourage consumer evaluation of these respective programs. If, in fact, you are going to subject yourself, as NOVA did in this case, to be certified as a community mental health agency, requiring a certification of all your professionals, you are going to have to subject yourself to a review by the public. It's just that simple. It's not any more complex than that, if in fact you meet the standard.
Going back to Justice Stratton's question about the audits, and I think there's an ongoing effort in the General Assembly to, there's some dispute about whether or not audits or audits conducted by private contractors for the state auditor, whether the details of those audits are available, and that may be in the process of being changed by the General Assembly now. But let's assume the General Assembly makes the change and says the results of the audit are a public record, whether they're done by a private auditing firm or done by the state auditor. You've indicated that's not enough. Doesn't the auditor and the audit function have the ability to do a performance type audit also to get at the kinds of things that you're speaking about?
In answering Justice Stratton's question, I was merely referring to the definition of public office. It would be my position that this court already has ruled on that issue in Mazzaro versus Ferguson, in which this court said that pursuant to 149.43C of the revised code, if a private entity is in possession of public records, they must produce those records. And they are subject to a mandamus proceeding under 149.43C. So if in fact an auditor were to, one of the big three or big two or how many are left, if in fact an auditor were to assume the duties of a state representative in performing an audit, I believe under Mazzaro versus Ferguson and this court's decision in Cincinnati Inquirer versus Kring, and even most recently in this court's decision in Toledo Blade versus the Ohio Bureau of Workers' Compensation, those records are subject to be produced.
Okay. Well, my question is, though, doesn't the auditor have the authority to do a performance type audit? In other words, if there is an issue of whether or not NOVA, for example, has competent staff or staff that are appropriately credentialed to be providing the services that are supposed to be provided and are being paid for, doesn't the auditor have the authority to examine such a question and therefore get at the deficiencies that are
underlying this case?
In this case,
both the Director of Mental Health and the Starr County Community Health Board have the expressed statutory and contractual authority to do the audit. There's no doubt about it.
All right.
I have to reserve.
Mr. Banzer, could I ask you a different question here?
Yes, Justice O'Donnell.
I'm interested in the test that you propound in response to Justice Stratton's question.
Yes, sir.
My question is, why is that not a matter that the legislature should incorporate into 149.43 as opposed to us incorporating it into this case?
Well, it already exists, Justice O'Donnell. All I'm doing is applying the facts to the law.
Pardon me?
All I'm doing is applying the facts to the law. It exists because of this court's decision in a number of cases, all of which I could name.
But if you read 149, they don't talk about private agencies turning over records. Records kept by public agencies. And what you're really asking us to do is make a determination about a private not-for-profit contract agency.
No, I think.
And if I understood you correctly, you said because they received $8 million or 80% of their revenues, we should just sort of morph them into a public agency and give them the money. Now, maybe I didn't understand your response to Justice
Stratton's question. I'm sorry, Justice.
But that's what I understood you to say. And if, in fact, that should be the law, why shouldn't the General Assembly do it? That's my question to you.
Sure. Thank you. I apologize for interrupting you.
No problem.
I think you are interpreting 149.43 a little too restrictive. 149.43 and the case law that this court has set forth beginning with the Fostoria case, clearly points out that public offices are under an obligation to produce public records. And public office is clearly defined by 149.011A. It is an entity that's organized under state law that performs any governmental function. So clearly, respondent Nova is in fact a public office under the test that I enumerated to Justice Stratton. It is a test that has been developed by this court in a number of cases and utilized most recently in July of 2005 in the Blade versus Ohio Bureau of Workers' Compensation case, the Capital Coin Fund 1 and 2 cases. The law exists. The legislature doesn't have to have to do anything. This court merely has to apply the facts to the law already enumerated by it a number of times.
Right. Mr. Panza, you also have a third test as well. If we're looking at the Stise case, the Parma case, you mentioned public entity performing the public function and also supported by public taxation. Are you not? That's what we articulated in that particular case?
Yes, ma'am. In Parma General, you did articulate that. And of course,
And when we're talking about public supported by public taxation, it's a little narrower than just saying public funds through, say, bonds and so on.
Well, it's whether or not, as I pointed out to Justice Stratton, your existence depends upon the substantial receipt of public monies. That is one of the elements. It is not the only element. You must also perform a governmental function. You must also be controlled by a governmental entity. All of those tests were the tests that Parma General failed, but they are the tests which apply in this situation, which apply to Respondent Nova.
However, mental health services can also be provided in a private capacity. It's not solely a governmental function. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely, I agree with that. The thing that separates this case from a private entity is the private entity, the Respondent Nova, chose to become a community mental health agency. It chose to subject itself to the certification of the Director of Mental Health and under the supervision of the Stark County Mental Health Board. Once it made that choice, that qualified it to receive the public monies, and that requires it to open its records to the public.
Counsel, do you see a difference in any concept here in the method of funding? You said if they receive public monies, that is one of the prongs of your test. Does it make a difference how they receive those public monies? In other words, bonds supported directly coming from a governmental entity, the funds flow directly to the entity, the private entity, or as in this case, where there's a service that is provided on a contractual basis. You see a distinction?
I see no distinction. As this court pointed out in Freedom Communication versus Alita, it was the identical situation. Alita was a private entity that performed firefighting services for three or four communities. It received the public funds through a contract and only through a contract. There was no direct funding. This court said in 1998 that was enough, and this court was right.
But that was firefighting.
That
was not something that is done in a private capacity as well. I mean, that's solely a government function, firefighting.
Well, through the enactment of Chapter 340 of the Ohio Revised Code, the government assumed to develop a system of mental health care for the state of Ohio.
But not exclusively.
Right. No, not at all exclusively.
And
not at all.
Doesn't exclusivity such as firefighting, which is typically reserved for a government to provide, a community to provide, and the provision of mental health services, which is not exclusively a governmental task or responsibility, is that not a distinction?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. I don't believe so at all.
I think the case law supports the distinction there.
No, I don't believe the case law supports the distinction there at all. In fact, Elita received 97% of its funds from these respective municipalities. It obviously received 3% of its money from somewhere else. The court never, or has never, in my estimation from a review of the cases, required exclusivity in terms of whether or not the organization or whether or not the governmental function being performed is the exclusive purview of the government. As long as it constitutes a vital governmental function being performed, it qualifies.
Mr. Panza, is there existing case authority that says a private not-profit corporation is a public office under 149.011A? A case to that effect that you...
Yeah, Freedom Communications versus Alita, 1998, Ohio Supreme Court.
What was the private entity there?
Private entity was a organization that contracted with a number of municipalities to fight fires. But one of the principal premises, rules of law, that came out of that case is that a private, not-for-profit entity can, in fact, be a public office. It is a cardinal principle of that case.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Panza.
Yes, Your Honor.
Mr.
Thank you.
Good morning, Chief and Justices, Mr. Panza and Mr. Colas. I'm John Lindemood, and I represent Nova Behavioral as it used to exist. And I think the part that concerns me the most about this particular case is Relator's failure to distinguish between the mental health board versus those corporations, be they private or public, with whom they contract. The mental health board provides no mental health services. They, in Stark County, had 14 agencies, of which Nova was one, who then contracted after getting their own certification, their own accreditation, buying their own facilities, providing their own independent board of trustees, taking care of all their own insurance, paying their own retirement plan, and securing 189 qualified employees to provide services pursuant to that contract. Now, I distinguish a public agency as the Stark County Mental Health Board from the private not-for-profit corporation doing business with them, that being Nova. The Mental Health Board was created by statute, publicly funded by tax levies, and state and federal funds. Nova was not. I have mentioned in my brief the Ohio Attorney General's opinion, 97.008. The reason I did that, it was a ruling by the AG back in 1997 that said any public agency contracting for services, once those funds are transferred to the private entity, they lose their public identification.
But haven't we? We've held differently, haven't we? How is this different than the state auditor receives an appropriation from the General Assembly to perform the auditor's functions of auditing the records of state agencies and other agencies, and that money is passed along then by contract to a company that actually does the auditing. We've held obviously there that the company who does the auditing, the books are public because that private company is performing a public service. How is this different? The money goes to the mental health board, the local board, and they pass the money off by contract to a private entity that performs the function that the General Assembly has said is now a public purpose.
You may be referring to the Toledo workers' comp case.
No, I'm not. I think it's the Mazzaro case versus Ferguson. I think that's the case where we held that because the private entity is performing a public function, okay, and using public funds to do that, the records of that private entity are public, just as they would be if the auditor sent his or her auditors out to the site and did the auditing. How is this different?
There, I think, Chief, is another distinction that has been failed to be mentioned by a relator. 149, as my amicus counsel, with whom I'm splitting my time, by the way, will more elaborate on, 149.41431 sets forth an exception for private entities. And it's interestingly enough, your point specifically is it deals with financial records. It doesn't deal with a CV of a board of director. It doesn't deal with a personnel file of our maintenance supervisor.
Your argument is that the public interest follows the money, so the auditing should be confined to...
I think that, going to Justice Stratton's original question, I do not want to be inexorably intertwined. But going to your initial question, what rule of law that this court, I think consciously for the past several years, has sought to avoid, and that is, are we going to confront ourselves with a situation where we have to listen to every case, pull out a calculator, and figure out a percentage to determine whether or not it's subject to the public records law? I don't think that's what this court nor this state needs. This court set forth in Parma Hospital case the three tests, as Justice O'Connor mentioned and Justice Lansinger: public service, publicly funded but through taxation, and a public institution. Number one, NOVA is not a public agency. It is a not-for-profit private corporation. We did file for 503(1)(c) to make it a charitable corporation. So as a result of that filing, we do open our doors. We don't discriminate as to our patients. That clearly provides services for anyone who may need them. With regard to control, the relator has emphasized this wonderful control that the Mental Health Board allegedly has over us. They have no control whatsoever over the day-to-day operations. The Exhibit B, page 26, in the booklet, it's not numbered on the book, but that is the fiscal year 2005 contract that provided for payment to NOVA under that contract if the funds are available, actual delivery of services. Our services had to be rendered before we could even make a claim for payment, and then submission of valid claims. They, under that contract, had the right then to review where these monies were going, were our claims appropriately made, were the services performed, but they didn't control any of the day-to-day operations of our three separate geographic facilities.
Counsel, help us with the understanding. What exactly is it that the newspaper wanted to know that NOVA wasn't willing to disclose?
Justice Pfeiffer, thank you for asking that. Newspapers, and I don't mean this to be generically inappropriate, but this case had something possibly to sell some papers. There was a complaint against one of our counselors that his techniques were inappropriate. They thought, aha, that might mean sex. So, and the counselor, I admit, was kind of an unusual character who took some of our worst cases. They thought, well, let's get this fellow's personnel file and see what we can find, because it might make good reading. Well, continuing through this whole process, the control, by the way, was not from a state agency on him. Each of our counselors had their own licensing authority, and they were required to keep those up and abide by their ethics rules and so forth and so on. So the Mental Health Board has no control over that either. But they thought, I think, and I'm guessing, that they might be find something salacious in his personnel file.
So they wanted to see his personnel file.
Exactly. There were no financial issues involved in that request.
And that's what NOVA decided they did not want to disclose.
We decided because of our status, we did not have to disclose that under
the
public
records. Well, I'm not, yeah. There's the legal question, but there's also the community question. NOVA provides a community service, presumably wants to have a good reputation in the community.
No question
and
about that.
So when the community newspaper comes asking, irrespective of what your legal rights are, you have
Well, we also have an obligation to the employee.
You have a decision to make, and you can voluntarily disclose whether or not you're required to. Anybody can do that. Private, public, you name it.
You mean voluntarily turn it over?
Voluntarily, yeah.
Could, but you'd be sacrificing and setting a terrible precedent, I think, which would come back to haunt you. Their publisher was quoted several days after this.
In what respect?
To set that precedent?
No, to opening a personnel file. In what respect is that?
Well, number one, I think it violates the employee's rights. We said we'd release it with his permission.
What right would that be?
The right of privacy as to the contents of the personnel file?
Yeah.
For our employee? I think that's a pretty basic right.
Mr.
Their own publisher was quoted following this inquiry, quote unquote, it's not about the personnel file. They decided and made a decision through this mandamus action to file this action to try and get the court to change its definition of a public agency subject to 149, even in view of the Parma case, which was issued in 2001.
Yeah, you allege that in your brief, that the facts are incidental to this being a vehicle to be a case to advance the ball in a certain direction.
I do, because it's frustrating to me to have to take up this court's time, for I felt a very clear expression by this court of what the public records law provides, set forth in the Parma case in 2001.
Mr. Panza says that the personnel file is important. Obviously, it's not an auditing function, financial auditing, but it's important because it's a reflection of, or the monitoring of, the quality of the services provided by an agency that's receiving public funds. What's your response to that?
My response to that is certainly under 340, the enabling statute for the Mental Health Board, they had the right to review that personnel file. The state licensing agency, the Licensing Counselor Board for the state of Ohio, actually held a hearing involving these allegations about him. Unfortunately, he's passed away, so they never made a board decision with regard to that licensure investigator. So in terms of oversight and checking out that information, public agencies have that authority, and it's not through the public records access by a newspaper.
And then any disciplinary action that the licensing entity would take against a professional that is required to be licensed is public?
Yes, ma'am.
Whether it be, you know, an attorney, a doctor,
in fact, it was more than public, Justice O'Connor. It became public during the hearing itself. All the allegations of witnesses were talking to the press about what was going on in Columbus.
So there's an alternative source for the information that they're seeking.
I think Mr. Bridgman
would
is
like
anxious to replace you.
Yes, I would
podium.
Like to ask Mr. Bridgman, who's representing Amicus, who will go into the statutory problems.
Thank you, Mr. Lindemuth. Mr. Bridgman.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. I'm Ross Bridgman. I'm here on behalf of the Ohio Council of Behavioral Health Providers, which is a trade association which represents approximately 160 community mental health agencies. I want to make just a few points regarding what I've heard this morning and the questions that I've heard from the court. The first is that Chapter 340, by its terms, prohibits the Stark County Mental Health Board from, in fact, engaging in the day-to-day control of the agency. That is set forth directly in Chapter 340.03. So, in fact, the actual language is you are prohibited, except in very rare circumstances, and they are not present today, from interfering in, controlling, or operating a community mental health center on a day-to-day basis. That's critical. Number two, I just want you to understand that Chapter 340.03G, which confers the authority on the Adam Board, the Mental Health Board, to enter into purchase contracts with private and public agencies, was passed and it became effective in October of 1980. The chapter 143.341, or 431, excuse me, which we refer to in our brief, was passed in the fall of 1980 and became effective in early January of 1980. I submit to you that the legislature did in fact address the issue which Justice Lanzinger discussed or indicated in her question regarding the difference between support by taxation and purchase contracts. Without the legislature's intervention, there would have been a question as to whether this kind of purchase for service contract would have permitted a public inspection of financial records. The legislature decided, with the passage of Chapter 340G, which creates this situation where we have the purchase of mental health services from private entities, with the express vehicle to get to the financial records of the agency.
But
this
as
is
you
not
know,
a limitation
let me
on
interrupt
your
after you. As you know, the appellant in its reply brief says that the statute also says nothing in this section shall be .431. Nothing in this section shall be construed to otherwise limit the provisions of 149.43. What do we do with that?
Let me address that, Your Honor. Thank you. Are we proposing a limitation on Chapter 149.43? The answer is no. The three prongs of the PARMA test, first of all, we would say that there has been no showing here that this is a public institution because of the statutory reference that there is a lack of day-to-day control, and therefore this simply is not a public entity. It is exactly like the PARMA hospital. It performs certified mental health services, just like hospitals do, to the public. It is not, as Justice Lanzinger indicated, exclusively within the purview of mental health centers. It's not an exclusively governmental function.
Our law has not said, though, I don't think our case law has said that the public function has to be totally, and the Elida case, we have volunteer fire departments. Are those public or are those private?
Let me just make a, Justice Lanzinger asked, is there a difference in the kind of support between a supported by taxation and these purchase service contracts? And I think there is a distinction, and it goes right to the heart of the Justice's question regarding whether I am proposing a limitation on 149.43. And the distinction is this. In Elida, there was a direct assignment of tax revenues for a governmental function. I mean, it wasn't, I'm going to purchase a unit of counseling or a unit of psychiatric care or a unit of nursing or a unit of this and that. It was, here's 90%, 98% of our tax revenues, you do it. It was a complete transfer. So to call that a service purchase contract like this one, I think is not accurate. The other thing about that case is that, you know, I think that but for 149.431, there would be a strong argument that these kinds of purchase service contracts with not for-profit corporations would not be public contracts and would not be disclosable. So 149.431 is not a limitation on the statute, is an expansion of the statute, because you don't have to meet all the PARMA tests. All you have to do is be a not-for-profit corporation with a contract with a public entity for services, and you have to turn over your financial records. So all we did was say, look, it evidences the legislature's intention that in this kind of situation, the financial records will be open to the public. We believe that by implication, the legislature, in crafting 340 and 143.341, knew that, or intended, that the records of these community mental health centers would not be public but for the financial records. Unless, Chief Justice, and this is not a situation which is present today, unless there was a community mental health center which in fact was a public institution, i.e., was controlled by, day-to-day, was operated by the Adam Board. And there is a provision in the statute which permits the Adam Board to run a community mental health center, but that is only when there are no other community mental health centers in the geographic area. If we were dealing with a situation like that, then the community mental health center would be subject to the full panoply of public records protection. So I think in this situation, the legislature has made it very clear where the public's right to records begins and where it ends with respect to community mental health centers.
Let me ask you, Mr. Bridgman, that you and the appellant have a very strong difference of interpretation of the facts regarding the control that that the Adam Board has over, exercises over the private entity. And again, the reply brief, I want you to respond to this statement. The board exercises a high degree of control over respondents in such areas as the provision of coordination of treatment, record keeping, operations, quality assurance, and the monitoring and evaluation of services provided. In Parma, there was, as I recall, the money was transferred to the hospital and there was none of this oversight or conditions on the quality of service, was there? Isn't this different than?
I don't think so, Your Honor. I don't think that the court felt it necessary to go into that, but I don't think that it's too hard a stretch to recognize that hospitals have lots of governmental oversight. They're a highly regulated industry in this state. If you look at the regulations of the Department the Department of Health, who oversees hospitals, it has in fact delegated a function to the Joint Accreditation Agency, and hospitals must be certified. They must adhere.
Sure, but the entity transferring the money to the hospital in Parma did not certify the hospital, did not force them to comply with all these state regulations. Those were totally independent, were they not? I mean, that,
well, I don't know that they're totally independent. I mean,
well,
they were not imposed by
Parma.
Pardon me? I'm sorry, Your Honor.
They were not imposed by the entity that was transferring the funds to the hospital, were they?
Well, let me put it to you this way, Your Honor. If you have a contract that says you will obey all of the rules and regulations of the state of Ohio, and here are some of them, and they put them down in the contract, does that mean that there is more control of the state of Ohio or less control simply because a lot of what is required of this agency is also required in the statute?
So that's what Adam was doing here, your argument is, I think.
Our argument here is that if this contract is to be interpreted as conferring day-to-day control or management control over this agency, it violated Chapter 340. I don't think that has been a contention in this case. And much of what is in this contract is simply a recitation of Ohio Department of Mental Health regulations, of statutory provisions that are contained in Chapter 340, which provide extensive opportunities for the board to audit and monitor, not to run. And I think that in the Parma case, that is in fact the most serious difference between the relator and respondent in amicus is, look, we have a contract. It's a contract for specifications. It's not unlike a construction contract. It has lots and lots and lots and lots of provisions, and if you breach them, you're in breach of the contract, and you can lose your contract. Some of them are breaches of the law.
You need to sum up your argument.
Thank you very much. Unless there are other questions, thank you very much for your attention this morning, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Bridgman. Mr. Panza, you've used your time, but you may take 30 seconds.
With that 30 seconds, I'll merely make two points. 149.431 is not a limiting statute. It expands the review of public records to private entities that may not constitute public offices. But it does not eliminate the review by the public of other records of those same public offices or of different public offices. Justice O'Connor, I don't know why the newspaper asked for the personnel file, but I think it's extremely dangerous to presume that someone knows and can get it from some other source, and therefore the record doesn't have to be produced.
Is this case moot? Apparently the person that was subject to the report is deceased, and also the entity is deceased.
It is not moot. It is very much alive. the ability to review whether or not the Stark County Community Mental Health Agency was properly reviewing the employment of the mental health counselors employed by one of its community health agencies is very much alive and very much relevant to this court and to this state.
Counsel, could you portray what did happen when the newspaper asked? Were they just stonewalled on everything, or was this agency willing to sit down and discuss in some degree?
Justice Pfeiffer, on April 5th, 2005, the board made a determination that the actions of the counselor crossed over professional boundaries. On April 8th, 2005, a reporter for the Canton Repository made an oral request for the records and was denied. On April 22nd, I wrote a very lengthy letter detailing the law as it applied and applying the test of public office to this paper. Both the oral request and my written request were denied on the sole grounds that this was a private entity that did not have to comply with 149.43.
It seems like there's, this, I described it as a tightrope, but it is. We're dealing with an agency that delivers services to people that we, I think, would all agree the actual clients and their experiences would be very much privileged, and your client newspaper would not be wanting to disclose the details unless those persons came forward voluntarily, that they're even clients of this agency.
What's confidential under 149.43 is
right.
Confidential.
And an agency that on a daily basis deals in such a protective mode for the people, I think it's understandable that their mentality may be, we don't talk to anybody about anything, where it really should be one of openness if there's an incident that, say, rises to the level of prosecution or reporting to the appropriate credentialing authorities. Something that has taken place, and it would seem those things, just as a matter of course, one should be willing to discuss with the community newspapers.
Absolutely.
Without legal intervention.
I'm sorry?
Without legal intervention, or without concern as to whether or not you're a public agency or a private agency.
Your Honor, if the file had been turned over, we wouldn't be here, obviously.
You've used your time.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.